in Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. More than 3 weeks into the government shutdown, Republican senators head to the White House today for a group lunch with President Trump. Their meeting coming as the effects of the shutdown continue being felt.
Officials are warning time is running out for critical programs. SNAP, often called food assistance, which serves more than 40 million Americans, is set to dry up in most states by the end of this month.
ABC's Jay O'Brien, another deadline, November 1st. Open enrollment for those on Obamacare begins without government subsidies to help pay the premiums. Democrats are insisting on that for a reopening of the government. An appeals court has overturned a temporary restraining order, meaning the Trump administration can send National Guard troops to Portland. However, a second ruling prohibits that from happening. Vice President J.D. Vance has arrived in Israel trying to shore up the fragile Gaza ceasefire. Japan's parliament has elected the country's first woman prime minister, ultra-conservative Senai Takaichi. This is ABC News.
For 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale. Another drop in gas prices. Here's Civic Media's Melissa Kay.
Gas prices fell 6.7 cents over the last week for an average across the state of 261. This is over 28 cents per gallon lower than a month ago and more than 32 cents per gallon lower than this time last year. Notably, the national average has fallen below $3 per gallon for the first time since 2020. Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy, said OPEC Plus deserves much of the credit for the current trend of lower prices. They've steadily raised oil production for much of 2025. Barring any major disruptions, gas prices are likely to stay under $3 for much of the next few months.
In Appleton and Oshkosh, the average price for a gallon of gas is $2.58. That's down 11 cents from last week. In Green Bay, the price is averaging $2.65. A bill aimed at strengthening penalties against perpetrators of sextortion is heading to the governor's desk. Isabella Nieto has more.
Braden's law stems from the death of a D.C. Everest High School student, Braden Bone, who took his life after being targeted by an organized sexual extortion ring. The legislation establishes sexual extortion as a new crime and imposes severe penalties, including up to a 60-year sentence if the extortion results in the death of the victim. The bill passage comes less than 6 months after it was introduced to the legislature by a handful of legislators in April, including area reps Pat Snyder, Brent Jacobson, and John Spiros, joined by state senators Jesse James and Corey Tomchek in the effort. A spokesperson for Governor Tony Evers told WBAY in Green Bay that the governor intends to sign the legislation. For Civic Media News, I'm Isabella Nieto.
I'm Lisa Hale for 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News.
The Packers prepare for Pittsburgh. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL, the Packers play the Steelers this week on Sunday night. Matt LaFleur asked about running back Josh Jacobs demanding to get back in the game against the Cardinals Sunday despite a strained calf muscle.
Yeah, he's a grown man. There's no doubt about it. What he says is always backed up by his actions, and I think that's number one on the top of the list of what you need to be in order to be a great leader.
Baseball, the Blue Jays beat the Mariners 4-3 to advance to the World Series. Game one will be Friday night in Toronto against the Dodgers. Doc Rivers was asked if he still goes golfing with his friend, Dodgers manager Dave Roberts.
We plan on golf a lot. We never actually get to do it much. But the Brewers, they had an amazing year. And if you're going to lose, you lose to the most historic game in Major League history. And that's how they lost.
That's the Bucks, Doc Rivers, with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to WISS, the Fox Valley's home for the Midwest Farm Report, with me, Pam Yonke.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. A mix of clouds and sun today, blustery and colder, with scattered light showers developing in the afternoon. High temps only near 50. For tonight, scattered light showers to continue. Still breezy, low temperatures in the mid-40s. Right now, it's 42.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
Why is it that President Trump cares more about bailing out Argentinian farmers than he does about Wisconsin soybean farmers? We'll explain the connection.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to WISS.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 8:06 now. Nice to have you back here up north on a Tuesday morning. It is October 21st. Coming up, Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom joining us from the nation's capital. Then at 8:35, we will be talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area. About an hour ago, you heard my conversation with State Representative Francesca Hong, candidate for governor. What's that? You didn't hear it? You weren't around an hour ago? Well, we can help you with that. You can get this show as a podcast. Head over to Spotify or Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News, and listen to us anytime and catch a guest that you might have missed. And maybe you can't hang around till 8:35, but you want to hear Dan Schaefer. Well, start to follow us and you'll get them that way. So again, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us that way. A little later, we'll tell you some of the more popular stories of the past week at Up North News' social media feeds. Spoiler alert, a lot of you are interested in following the No Kings protests all across Wisconsin back on Saturday. That led to some developments in Washington, D.C. as well. So let's scamper right over there right now and talk to Cam Stevenson, Courier Newsroom's political correspondent there, our national correspondent, who His mint green walls have now been, there's an accessory. There's a very red and white Free DC flag. Cam, good morning. Congrats on the redecorating.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been officially welcomed and hazed into the DC community.
the free DC movement. I mean, this dates back to, the license plates say taxation without representation.
Yeah.
But, exactly. Now you add, troops to the mix, and you can see why flags like that are probably getting some new mileage.
Yeah, no, most definitely. The idea of Free DC, DC statehood, and especially DC independence from the ability for the federal government to send troops here to actively patrol, that idea is stronger than ever right now. That was a big theme at the No Kings protest in Washington, D.C. over the weekend, as the Free D.C. movement was out in full force. These flags are all over the place, and people want independence, not just from a would-be king, but independence to be their own, government body here.
And I thought it was great that in your newsletter below the Beltway, which you can get at beltway.news or through couriernewsroom.com, there is something that these three places have in common: Washington, D.C., Nepal, and Madagascar. Tell folks what you put in the newsletter about what they all shared.
Yeah, well, this it really sparks from a small alert I got from the White House press update team on Friday afternoon, which was that Donald Trump was leaving Washington, D.C. right before the protests started. And this, you know, this falls right in line with some protests we've seen in other countries this year, in Nepal and Madagascar, where the authoritarian leaders or unpopular leaders there were confronted with protesters and opposition. And instead of facing it and, you know, addressing the public which elected them, they fled. And that's exactly what Donald Trump did this weekend. Is he fled our nation's capital as 200,000 people came here to protest his presidency. And it wasn't until he was in his safe space in Palm Beach, Florida, in his private resort with his Secret Service and private security, that he began making fun of American citizens who were exercising their First Amendment right to protest.
Oh, I mean, as we discussed earlier, I mean, and you note in your newsletter, defecating on them symbolically through, you know, an AI video from a fighter jet, which has Kenny Loggins very bothered here. But it was obsessively posting true to his tiny network. We noted that Congressman Derek Van Orden posted more than 250 times. And by one national reporter's count, that is like the new record for like a 24 or 48 hour period, topping. Let's see, it wasn't Marjorie Taylor Greene. It was Nancy Mace had the previous record for the most time. It is an obsession that they have with posting social media, which really says something, Cam, about how having 7 million people take to the streets has a way to maybe get under their skin.
Yeah. Well, my first thought is like, geez, man, get a life. Yeah. I mean, if I'm spending my weekend just posting online hundreds of times, maybe that's a good sign to go touch some grass, go feel the warmth of the sun and be around real people. Because, you know, if there were 7 million people protesting, there were protests all across Wisconsin. Something tells me Representative Van Orden has some of his constituents who he represents who aren't happy with the administration. And so instead of being in his own social media bubble that he's apparently creating all by himself, maybe he should talk with these people and figure out what they want so that he could actually come to Washington, D.C., make compromises with Democrats in Congress and reopen the government. Because that's what he's just posting online instead of actually governing.
Well, basically, yeah, he's basically in a bunker at this point, which leads us to another interesting wrinkle that I learned about for the first time in your newsletter. But it has been mentioned elsewhere. I just missed it. But when you are so fixated on, you know, ruling no matter what the people think of you, there is a tipping point, and apparently, from what's been studied, there's a tipping point at the figure of 3.5% of the population. What is the significance of that?
Yeah, so a bunch of like revolutionary scientists and you know, academics have studied peaceful revolutions throughout the course of history, and what they found is that if 3.5% of the populace is in active peaceful opposition to their government, that is enough to switch that government, to, you know, to oust the leader, to change the leadership, and to peacefully find a way to democratically change who is running the government and the country. So in the United States, we have about 340 million people. So that would be roughly 12 million people in peaceful opposition. And we've seen an escalation in numbers throughout the months since yeah. Trump retook the presidency, where we were at 3 million people over the, you know, in the spring, 5 million people came out into protest in the summer, and now we have 7 million people coming out just last weekend. And that's a huge number, and that gets us incrementally closer to that 12 million.
Well, and if people wonder, well, would that grow? Let me refer you back to my comments last hour about beef farmers who suddenly learned that the guy they might have voted for wants to purchase a bunch of beef from Argentina. You know, the company or the country rather that has now taken our soybean market. Well, they didn't take it. You know, Trump basically gave it to them through a trade war with China, and now wants to help his friend, the ruler in Argentina, whose nickname, by the way, is El Loco. buying Argentinian beef. So do not be surprised if there is some kind of future event with more and more farmers talking about how they feel as well. There never seems to be an end of the list of constituencies that Trump is ready to cheese off next.
Right. Well, and that, I think, is one of the reasons why they were so actively trying to portray the protests this last weekend as violent antithesis to America, because they aren't gaining any constituency. Republicans in Congress and the president himself are at the lowest levels of support they've ever seen. Meanwhile, they are selling our beef, selling our soybeans, selling our agriculture and our livelihood away to the highest bidder. Meanwhile, they're also finding ways to change the makeup of the House of Representatives so they can have an unfair advantage in Congress, which universally people don't like. They don't like when they feel like someone's cheating, even if it's someone that they like. And so all of that coupled together creates this recipe for opposition, which we're seeing.
Well, and that's where when you saw them making such a big deal about a ceasefire last week, and I'm not trying to minimize the significance of a ceasefire if it were to hold, but, you know, there's always the need for a little bit of, shall we say, cautious optimism rather than, you know, openly campaigning for a Nobel Peace Prize. But they probably saw that as one of the few ways he could actually add supporters, as if peace were to hold in the Mideast, which it does not seem to be doing now. So now it's just back to, you know, making other constituencies unhappy in a town that is shut down right now. And so it appears that the only people working hard in Washington, D.C. right now are the demolition workers tearing down the east facade of the White House, which got started yesterday despite a president promising that his ballroom project would not damage the exterior of the White House. Not damage it. Let's bring in a whole demolition crew, Cam. That was, right. I mean, the metaphor of the year yesterday.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen destruction at the White House like that since 1812. It's something that, I mean, first of all, he promised one thing, another thing happened. I'm shocked. But you know, his administration at least knows that the bad optics of this. The U.S. Treasury overlooks the White House where this demolition is happening. Employees, after photos were already posted, were instructed not to post any more photos of the demolition because it's just like you said, it's very symbolic to see this a historic building, the symbol of power in the United States, demolished so that a ballroom could be created.
And one that didn't it didn't go through like Congress or anything. It was just, I'm going to do this. I'm going to raise money from my buddies. You know, I won't tell you what kind of things I'm going to do for them in return. There is just nothing that isn't shady about this whole notion.
Yeah. I mean, I can't get a crosswalk put in my neighborhood without a 90-day commentary period, to see if the paint is disruptive to the neighborhood. But he can bring in bulldozers to a taxpayer-funded home and just tear it down. It's beyond absurd.
No, and it is, I mean, again, there's so many images of 2025, but if one of them is the metaphor for it all, it would be what we saw over on the east facade of the White House yesterday. But back to the shutdown and people not getting work done, that means that a newly elected congressional representative from Arizona has still not been sworn in as the game playing goes on by Republican leadership.
Yeah, no, Adelita Grijalva, she's the representative-elect for Southern Arizona. It's been, I want to say, about a month at this point, where she has not only been elected, her election has been certified, not contested at all. She has flown to D.C. and been here waiting to get sworn in, whereas Speaker Mike Johnson has been just moving the goalposts of when he will swear her in. He said, well, there's a shutdown, so we can't do it now. We want to wait until we can have the whole House here to give you a big procession. And I can't remember what his most recent thing is, but he keeps making things up, essentially because her vote would give the House the final vote that it needs to release the Epstein files that the Department of Justice holds. which Mike Johnson has been explicitly told not to let be released. The Trump administration does not want that information out. They want whatever the exact opposite of transparency is into Jeffrey Epstein. And keeping Adelita Grijalva is essentially out of Congress is the way that they keep those files from being in the public eye.
Exactly. Follow all that and more in Cam Stevenson's Below the Beltway newsletter, beltway.news or careernewsroom.com. Thank you, Cam. Appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime.
All right. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area joins us in 15 minutes. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Metnair On Air.
Olson Legal Group is a local veteran-owned company with offices in Oshkosh and Berlin. It's always the right time to make an estate plan, and Olson Legal Group covers all your bases. From wills, trust, and non-probate transfers to powers of attorney for financial and health care, Olson Legal Group will ensure your wishes are honored and your loved ones are cared for. Plan today for peace of mind tomorrow. Call Olson Legal Group today at 920-230-7020 or olsonlegalgroup.com.
Do you or someone you know have disabilities but are challenged finding resources and guidance? Focus on Freedom provides support for children and adults with diverse abilities with a variety of customized services such as one-to-one supports for individuals like daily living skills and training, along with personalized caregiver supports like foundations and caregiving seminars. Focus on Freedom empowers individuals to reach their goals and live as independently as possible, serving residents throughout Winnebago, Outagamie, and Fond du Lac counties. Find us at focusonfreedom.org, empowering independence, transforming lives.
Hey, it's Amanda, and we all know that Northeast Wisconsin has some of the best events around, but trying to find them all can be a little tricky. So here at WISS, we decided to do the work for you. Prevent boredom on any night by going to WISS.fm and click events in the top right corner. You'll never have to spend forever scrolling to find out what's going on in your area. And if you've got an event to share, hit us up. Email info at WISS.fm. We can work together to have real news and great conversation while giving you the 411 on what's happening in New Wisco.
Seems like nobody in America agrees on much of anything these days.
But can we agree the federal government shouldn't tax people into poverty?
If you work full-time, you should be able to afford your basic needs. Don't you think? We're the Patriotic Millionaires.
We believe your full-time job should cover what it costs to live. We think your first $45,000 of income should be tax-free.
And multimillionaires?
We should pay more to fund your tax cut. Go to first45taxfree.com to learn more. A working-class tax cut paid for by millionaires. That's an idea we can all agree on.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
I'm Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale. Today I'm joined by Yava Engel, who is the Executive Director of the Oshkosh Area Humane Society. Hello, Yava.
Hello, Lisa.
So we've got so much to talk about today because I really want to hit on right now the shelter is, we call it full for fall, but it's full of felines right now. Last check I had was 151 cats in care of OAHS. And that goes up and goes down as people adopt and kitty cats get brought in. But that's a lot of cats right now. So tell me how that's affecting the shelter.
That's a lot of cats. And we have a lot of cats in foster care as well. And it's impacting shelter purely from workflow standpoint. And that is just very, very busy. As we're taking in new cats, we're struggling finding a spot for them on the adoption floor. So it's disrupting our operations that way.
In addition to the fact that there are so many kitties that are in not only the OAHS, but also Nina is full with felines right now. Recently, and I hate to bring it up because, you know, it's one of those things that people go, oh, no, but there was a virus that was in the kitten population of OAHS. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, we did have one kitty at the shelter who passed away from panleukopenia, and we had one kitty who was in foster care pass away from panleukopenia. And so being that it's a very, very contagious illness and can be very dangerous for especially kittens under 5 months of age, we immediately enacted our protocol for how to deal with an outbreak of this sort, because it can spread extremely, extremely fast. Other shelters have had it as well, and we have had in the past. But Dr. Laura, our wonderful staff veterinarian, did an immediate risk assessment of all the cats that could have potentially been exposed to those two cats, and enacted a plan where some of the kitties now have been quarantined in the back of the building. They are not available for adoption just yet. So they'll be in quarantine for 2 weeks. And then we also have cats that we know were not in contact at all with those two kitties that are all fully vaccinated. All our cats are fully vaccinated for panleukopenia. Right. So they are available on the adoption floor. So it's fewer kitties right now available for adoption, but please come check them out. They're wonderful cats. And now that there are fewer cats on the adoption floor, they actually get more space in the galleries. So it's a great exercise area for them.
That is good. So when we talk about, and I'm not even going to try to say it because every time I try to say that virus, I say it wrong. So it is to cats as parvo is to dogs, correct?
That's correct, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's how contagious it is too, yeah.
It's very contagious. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that can be, as you said, detrimental to a kitten. Mm-hmm. So you've had to deal with that on top mm-hmm. of having so many cats that are in foster care mm-hmm. that, and cats just keep coming in.
Sure, sure.
You've got a wait list of people that really need you to be able to mm-hmm. take their cats. Mm-hmm. So this affects that as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. We are still taking in strays though, because we're contracted with multiple municipalities, including Oshkosh, of course, for taking in stray animals. So we're still honoring all of those. However, the surrenders, owner surrenders, we're currently waitlisting temporarily just so we can get this under control. And then we'll be reaching out and scheduling those surrenders as well.
So the virus aside, you do have some wonderful cats that are ready mm-hmm. to be adopted. So they're on the adoption floor. People can come check them out. But also, how do you, maybe you're interested in one of them that's in foster care. How do mm-hmm. you find out about those?
If they are kittens who are ready to be coming back from foster care, you can definitely reach out to our foster coordinator, Nikita, at OAHS.org. Or you can just keep your eye open online which kitties are available for adoption, and then we can facilitate that as well.
And how much does it cost to adopt a kitty?
Well, we have no fees to adopt kitties. However, we do ask us that you reimburse us for the microchip, and for the city license if you are living in city of Oshkosh, and then also for the rabies shot. So that ends up, without the license, it's $45. With license, it's $50.
And you know, that's minimal compared to some of the things mm-hmm. that I have seen. You know, I've been interested in a dog, and it's been $500 mm-hmm. to adopt the dog or whatever. So, you know, that is very low. And I hope that you get a lot of people coming in, you know, finding their purr-ever friend.
I love this. I had never thought of that before. I need to incorporate that somehow.
So what's the process for adopting a cat?
The process is very simple. What we ask you to do is just come to the shelter during our open hours. So it's Tuesday through Friday between 1 p.m., and 6 p.m., and then Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Check out the kitties, explain to our staff, our adoption counselors are available to show you the kitties, and then we matchmake. So they want to find the best fit for your household, so please feel free to explain to them what you're looking for personality-wise, what other animals you have in the home, and what you are looking for. Do you want a lap cat, or are you fine with maybe a more aloof cat, which one of my cats is very aloof, and that's just how she is. But then once you've met the kitty, you can fill out the application form right there. And then typically within next day, 24 hours, our adoption counselors reach back out with an update on the application. And then we schedule pickup And that's that.
And that's the, and you have a new that's forever
right.
friend.
That's right. New forever friend. Yes.
Forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's always a pleasure to have you here because, number one, you know the Oshkosh Area Humane Society is close to my heart. I've gotten yes. many of my animals from there. But also, the work that you do for the community is important because we do have some stray cats and some stray mm-hmm. animals in the community, and you guys are the ones who helped care for those. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, we take in about, I would say, around 700 stray animals from city of Oshkosh alone a year, so...
God, I thought you were going to say a month, and
oh,
I almost...
Oh, gosh, no, no. Talk about being full for a fall.
Yava Engel from the Oshkosh Area Humane Society, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa.
This is Valley Focus on WISS.
Finally, a voice for real news and great conversation in the Fox Valley, WISS.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to WISS, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
For 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale. Recently, a stray cat brought into the Oshkosh Area Humane Society tested positive for panleukopenia, also called feline distemper. It's a highly contagious, potentially fatal disease in cats. So the shelter is pausing cat surrenders for the time being. Yava Engel, Executive Director of OAHS.
Unfortunately, we did have one kitty at the shelter who passed away from panleukopenia, and we had one kitty who was in foster care pass away from panleukopenia. And so being that it's a very, very contagious illness and can be very dangerous for especially kittens under 5 months of age, we immediately enacted our protocol for how to deal with an outbreak of this sort because it can spread extremely, extremely fast.
While the shelter is not accepting surrenders at this time, they are still taking in stray animals.
Because we're contracted with multiple municipalities, including Oshkosh, of course, for taking in stray animals. So we're still honoring all of those. However, the surrenders, owner surrenders, we're currently waitlisting temporarily just so we can get this under control.
In the meantime, the shelter is full of felines. A recent count showed that OAHS had 151 cats in care. Some are kittens in foster care, some are strays that are still on hold, others are on medical holds, and the remaining are on the adoption floor. See the story at WISS.fm for information on how you can help the shelter or adopt a forever friend. I'm Lisa Hale for 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News. For news anytime, visit WISS.fm.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The live part of Saturday Night Live can be a liability at times, as proven this past weekend. Sabrina Carpenter appeared on the show as the host and musical guest. The host side of Carpenter did fine, but the musical side dropped two F-bombs during her song Nobody's Son from her new album Man's Best Friend. Both F-words played live during the broadcast and on the Peacock simulcast, but after some editing, the West Coast saw the PG-13 version. Carpenter performed wearing a karate gi, but unfortunately they were not able to edit out her wardrobe. Here's one of Pete's picks. Roofman is worth a look. This well-reviewed action comedy is a true story about a man who breaks into McDonald's stores through the roof. Even after getting caught, he manages to escape prison and live in a Toys R Us for several months while making a plan to escape the country. The film stars Channing Tatum, Peter Dinklage, and Kirsten Dunst, and was a really fun watch with a really nice but not too preachy message. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on WISS.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. A mix of clouds and sun today, blustery and colder, with scattered light showers developing in the afternoon. High temps only near 50. For tonight, scattered light showers to continue, still breezy, low temperatures in the mid-40s. Right now, it's 42.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
A very funny stand-up comic, Mr. Mike Toomey. The last time I saw a Goldie Hawn film in the theater, the male lead was giving her a foot massage, and it was the worst foot I've ever seen. I actually said out loud, I went, ew. And my aunt started cracking up.
Yeah, maybe they could have had a stand-in, like a stunt foot. Or
please,
something.
Even if it's a guy's foot, I don't care.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and I dig into Donald Trump's promise to sic the IRS on his enemies. I thought that was illegal. We discuss next.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Tomorrow on the program, a nice typical Wednesday morning with Ellie Bardot, the editor of the Up North News Daily Newsletter, will join us just after the 7 o'clock news. We will be visited by Earl Ingram to talk about the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast on Civic Media. Melissa Baldoff will have our climate check. We'll talk to Jimmy Cuska, Civic Media sports director, and more. That's all coming up tomorrow here between 6 and 9 on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, Civic Media political editor, joins us now as well. Mr. Schaefer, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Kreitlow. Always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Powered by Up North News. On the
powered by Up
North
News.
You got to give the whole team. The whole marketing thing. I mean,
the whole thing. You're right.
The whole schmear. They get mad if you don't give the whole title all the time. So, Dan, thank you for joining me on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's like talking about yourself in third person. You know,
that's right. Yeah.
It's awkward, and yet it's what the people want. So, did you partake in some observing of No Kings rallies over the weekend?
I did. I did go to the Milwaukee No Kings rally, took some photos. You can see those photos now at the Recombobulation Area. Wasn't able to be there for the entire event, but I got there, saw a couple of the speakers, and then made my way through the crowd and kind of tagged along with the march and took some photos and just kind of took it all in. You know, it was a great experience. Very peaceful in Milwaukee. You know, lots of people very fired up. You know, I saw that we had at the Milwaukee one, there was a, you know, presence from some voices that you may hear on the Civic Media Network. Earl Ingram was the MC. Maggie Dawn spoke. Angela Lang spoke. So it was a great event.
And again, you know, not disruptive, which, by the way, is not just a credit to all the people that showed up and didn't take the bait, but frankly, it just doesn't sound like a lot of people were out there baiting the crowds. I mean, we've heard people drove by and gave, you know, one finger salutes and honked their horns, but there was, I would say, minimal disruption or counter protesting. It was just a largely peaceful day of protest, which is about as American as it gets.
Absolutely. Yeah, the only thing I saw in Milwaukee, there was one part of the parade route went past like an apartment building and somebody was trying to like drive out of the parking garage and towards the traffic, and it was blocked by the several blocks of protesters. And I just thought it was funny that the person leaving at that time happened to be driving a Tesla. so they blocked the Tesla from trying to get out of their apartment downtown. I thought, yeah, I did get a little kind of a kick out of that. So.
Well, yeah, because if it had been a Subaru, you know, the crowd would have parted.
That's right.
Come on down. It's just fine. But they're not doing that for a Tesla by no stretch whatsoever. So, yeah, so we did have these rallies that got out there. And again, just from the standpoint of observing it, we talked to Cam Stevenson in our last half hour about how, you know, in many places, crowds were double or even triple what they were for the protests in June, that at the moment, there does not seem to be anything that would indicate the pendulum swinging back toward support for Donald Trump. If that many more people want to show up this time at a protest, then clearly people don't show up at these things unless they've got a beef. There's no George Soros paycheck or anything like that. These are people that have legitimate gripes or at least concerns about what's happening in the present day.
That's exactly right. It's a whole lot of people who are very concerned about the future of the country and the present of the country and what has happened over the last 9 months since Donald Trump has returned to office. And you know, I've found it so funny and, you know, predictably, I guess, to a certain extent, Republicans are just like, you know, saying, oh, well, he was elected. You don't have a king. You know, this isn't a no kings. Well, look what he is doing. He is governing as if he was a king. Look at what just yesterday at the White House, they're tearing down, you know, part of the East Wing. It does not seem like he has any plans to leave. He has his Donald Trump 2028 gift shop merch next to tearing down a part of the White House. Like, it doesn't seem like he has any plans to leave. And then just look at everything that he is doing as president now, trying to trample over the Constitution, trample over court orders, pretty much sideline Congress entirely, governed by executive order. This is the exact type of thing that we should all be concerned with. The rise of encroaching authoritarianism.
Yes, yes. The monarchy wannabes, if you will, out there. And a complacent, compliant Congress that goes along with it. The only person that was, you know, posting more obsessively to social media than Donald Trump was Derek Van Orden, with reportedly at least 250 posts to Twitter over the course of the weekend. Because, again, it's not like he's got anything else to do in Congress these days. But, I mean, I would like to think we are paying our presidents and our members of Congress to do more than obsessively post to social media. I mean, I can do that, but I haven't been elected to anything.
Yeah, well, I saw that one of the guys from that group, Midas Touch, posted something saying that Derek Van Orden made 257 posts Saturday and Sunday on X, breaking Nancy Mace's record for a weekend and pushing Mike Lee into third all time. So he's really breaking records out here. Even Derek Van Orden ramped it up this weekend for his his posts. Pretty wild.
Yeah, really, really not advertising himself as any kind of effective lawmaker at all. And again, he's towing the company line, like Speaker Mike Johnson. I guess Congressman Brian Stile was on Upfront on WISN TV in Milwaukee this past weekend, along with Congresswoman Gwen Moore from Milwaukee. And again, nobody likes to say, well, there's nothing new. The fact of the matter is there is nothing new in D.C. Brian Stile is still parroting the Republican points. Gwen Moore is still, telling you what's actually happening with the shutdown. If anything's new, it's the ongoing number of federal employees and others who are concerned about the lack of paychecks. I mean, was it in Milwaukee or elsewhere? They're starting to do food drives for like federal workers, TSA workers, things like that. That's where we're at.
That's where we're at. And I think you mentioned this on the show all the time. It's just Republicans could end this pretty much whenever that they want to. Right. I mean, and I think Republicans have been really losing the argument on what Democrats are, making this shutdown about, which is extending those healthcare tax credits. And I think, we saw some data come across yesterday in Wisconsin about how, the Wisconsin Democratic Party released some information about how high average premiums are going to be going up across the state without these subsubsidies being in place. So we're still seeing the standoff. But I think, we had even Marjorie Taylor Greene last week saying that, this is going to impact people in my district, people in Georgia. And I think many people, members of Congress, are seeing that, like, if Republicans decide not to play ball on negotiating on these tax credits, it's going to be bad for all of their constituents back home. It's going to be bad for all of them in the midterms.
Yeah. Again, there is no There's no position or talking point from the Republicans that makes Americans go, oh, yeah, I could totally see that side of it. Whereas they're hearing Democrats talking about health insurance costs spiking. They're seeing the spiking and understanding, you know, that's not BS. And so, yeah, you see why public opinion is the way that it is. So, well, let's shift gears then back to the state level that you cover so well. And we'll talk about the governor's race here for a sec, because we did get a chance to interview Francesca Hong. We heard that interview back early this morning. We had Kelda Royz on last week. Of course, more candidates, you know, as we're able to get them on the show here and across the Civic Media Radio Network. But I wanted to, you know, come back to my question to Fran was about what lane are you in trying to stand out? And she embraced the wild card label, like the Uno game, and that and she framed it in a way as that the Uno card, the wild card in Uno, can change the direction of the game. And it's like she's trying to shift the conversation, make sure it doesn't drift too far moderate, I guess, if you'd call it that. You want to go through and so can we, without trying to pigeonhole, but the lanes that these people are in, if Fran is the, you know, the wild card lane, where does that put David Crawley and Missy Hughes and things like that? How would you kind of describe their lanes?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things going on here with it, because I think there's both some ideological lanes, as you kind of pointed to, Francesca Hong being probably the most progressive candidate in the field for governor that who has announced just yet. And so I think there will be, you know, progressive, moderate, you know, finding that center, whatever it might be. I also think there are kind of some regional lanes to examine with this too, because, you know, Francesca Hong and Kelda Royz being from Madison, David Crowley being the Milwaukee County executive, you know, so I think there are some lanes regionally that we should be, you know, taking into consideration too, because I think that's going to be a big part of the primary calculus. And I do think, you know, unlike the Senate race a couple of years ago that we had in Democratic primary in 2022, you know, I think this is going to be a race that is going to go all the way to the primary. I don't think this is going to be one that is going to, you know, have someone emerge as some sort of clear front runner and everybody step aside. That happened pretty late in the race with Mandela Barnes in 2022. You know, I certainly could see it happening on the Republican side if Tom Tiffany does land that apparently coveted Trump endorsement. But I think, you know, Francesca Hong could be the progressive candidate here. David Crowley, I think he's the only candidate that really has executive experience, so that could be a part of the lane that he carves out. You know, if Kelda Royz, as she did in 2018, gets a lot of endorsements from a lot of pro-choice reproductive rights groups, you know, that could be a part of her candidacy too. And then Sarah Rodriguez, you know, being a candidate that flipped a assembly district from red to blue, she could kind of be somebody who could be indicative of those shifts that are happening in the suburbs, especially given her healthcare background. You know, I think there are places like, you know, Wauwatosa and Whitefish Bay around Milwaukee that have zoomed to the left in recent years, and perhaps Rodriguez could be a candidate to speak to those types of voters.
Yeah. And then you've got Missy Hughes, you know, running in the lane of business savvy from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. And so, yeah, you've got some, they're bunched up regionally, but it feels like everybody's got their own little area of expertise that, frankly, if you're a voter, I mean, I'm not going to lie, if I were going into that booth right now, if today were August 11th, 2026, I think a whole lot of voters would go, you know, and not come in with a firm, yep, this is my person, right or wrong. So it's why we're going to hear so much of them over the, you know, the next many months here.
And I think
it themselves.
And I think this is a strong bench too. These are quality candidates, and I do think that having this debate about what the future of the Democratic Party, a future of Wisconsin, is going to be, is an important one that we need to have, because I think, you know, nationally and elsewhere, Democrats, the brand is bruised. The brand is not in great shape. And I do think we often see in Wisconsin an election here that can preview an election nationally. So can Wisconsin figure out the path forward, and maybe they can lead the way for the rest of the Democrats across the country?
Alicia notes on YouTube, they are all good choices. And again, that's why there's going to be so much said between now and August 11th. And like Dan says, probably have a large chunk of the field stay in it all the way through. On the other side of the break, I'm going to ask Dan about Tom Tiffany and Josh Shulman on the Republican side and whether there is something to be said for not necessarily wanting Trump's endorsement if his ratings continue to fall as we get closer to next August. That's coming up right after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lakeland Care is proud to be named one of the top workplaces in Wisconsin for 2025. But what really sets us apart is our commitment to providing personalized support for frail elders and adults with disabilities. Our care teams go above and beyond to help our members live their best lives with dignity and independence. Interested in becoming a member? Visit your local Aging and Disability Resource Center to see if you qualify. To learn more, visit www.lakelandcareinc.com. Lakeland Care. Together, we build better lives.
With locations in Appleton and Oshkosh, Insight Eye Care has been serving the Fox Valley since 1972, offering comprehensive eye care services. Their doctors also share a special interest in treating chronic dry eye disease, providing specialty contact lenses, and expert pediatric eye care. Find Insight Eye Care on North Sawyer Street in Oshkosh and Chain Drive in Appleton. Improving lives by improving sight with quality eye care for everyone in your family. Insight Eye Care. Visit WIinsight.com to schedule your eye exam today.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. After serving less than 4 months of a 7-year sentence, disgraced New York Congressman George Santos had his sentence commuted by President Donald Trump on October 17th. Santos had pleaded guilty to wire fraud and aggravated identity theft in August 2024. Shortly after the newly elected congressman took office, inconsistencies surfaced about Santos's resume and financial dealings. The FBI, IRS, and the U.S. Attorney's Office investigated, and in May 2023, leveled 13 charges of wire fraud, money laundering, theft of public funds, and lying on U.S. House financial forms. More charges of identity theft and credit card fraud followed in October 2023. After a plea deal, Santos pleaded guilty on reduced charges, was forced to pay restitution, and began serving an 87-month sentence in July 2025. U.S. Attorney John Durham said at the time, "Today, George Santos was finally held accountable for the mountain of lies, theft, and fraud he perpetrated." October 13th, Santos published an open letter to Trump in the South Shore Press, saying, quote, "I am asking for fairness, for the chance to rebuild." In commuting his sentence on Friday, Trump wrote, "George Santos was somewhat of a rogue, but there are many rogues throughout our country that aren't forced to serve 7 years in prison." We've linked the Santos letter at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
All right, back now with Dan Schaefer at just about 8:53 on this Tuesday, October 21st. Nice to have you along here. Let's wrap up our conversation on the governor's race, and then we're going to get into some disturbing allegations about how the Department of Public Instruction has handled possible sexual misconduct cases. So that topic is coming up in just a moment. But to wrap up the gubernatorial nomination discussions, you've got two candidates in there right now. Everybody everybody, in quotation marks, believes Tom Tiffany is the front runner, being a member of Congress, a longtime member of the state legislature. Prior to that, Josh Shulman is the Washington County executive. And I think it was last week I said, Dan, that there's no real reason for President Donald Trump to make an endorsement. If there's just the two candidates, he can let them fight it out to see who can grovel the most, who can love him the most publicly and all that. But in light of the No Kings protests, I mean, this is a fair question to ask. Is there something to be said for looking at the tea leaves and saying, you know, it's okay if Trump doesn't endorse me, either one of those two, because as we get closer to the August primary, it could be that there's a lane for one of them to say, you know, I'm going to be the one who's independent from Donald Trump. Right now, that's a death knell in a Republican primary, but might there be a lane for that by next summer?
It's an interesting question and one to consider because, you know, Trump's popularity has never been lower than it is right now. It's about where it was, you know, following January 6th. But I do think that, you know, he's still so popular within the Republican Party. And I think the Republican Party, you know, folks, Republicans in Wisconsin also recognize that Trump was able to drive turnout in ways that most other Republican candidates have not been able to do. You know, he won the vote in the state last year by really driving turnout among a lot of voters who don't typically turn out in every election. So I think that was part of the calculus and why, you know, they really tied themselves to Trump in the state Supreme Court race with Brad Schimmel. And I think it's why we're going to see candidates continue to do that in Wisconsin, because Trump won here and he won here by driving turnout. And I think that is, you know, whether or not the Trump endorsement is a really good thing for the general election for Republicans, you know, that's a conversation that we can have around this time next year. But I do think that, you know, in a primary, it matters. And I think just to the larger calculus of how many votes are going to turn out in next November, I think, you know, he's still been proven to drive that turnout. And I think that's going to be a factor for why Republicans are going to stick with him through the midterms.
So the easiest prediction I will make all day is that the eventual Republican nominee on August 10th will tell you how close they are to Donald Trump. On August 11th, we'll win the primary. And on August 12th, we'll say, I am the person who is going to be an independent voice for Wisconsin, and I don't need Donald Trump. That's just my bold prediction for
that's a very sound prediction, Mr. Kreitlow.
Thank you. That's what they pay me to do here, almost. So now on a much more somber, serious topic, there was a year-long investigation done by the Cap Times out of Madison. The headline is 200 teacher sexual misconduct and grooming cases were shielded from the public, and goes on to discuss, you know, what has been the result of their reporting. And yet from the Department of Public Instruction, you have a statement where Superintendent Jill Underley is demanding a public correction of recent reporting by the Cap Times, and says that any suggestion that the DPI withholds information from the public is categorically false. And of course, Republicans who have never been necessarily friendly toward public education have, you know, seized upon this right away. So like it or not, whatever the facts are or not, you now have politicization of these, you know, alleged terrible cases happening in our schools. And Dan, I think this is a topic that more people are going to learn about, and it's going to stick with us for a while.
Yeah, I think this is a big story, and I think this is a big deal, and I think we should take it seriously. You know, if this is a year-long investigation by the Cap Times that I'll just quote right from the story here, found that the State Department of Public Instruction investigated more than 200 Wisconsin teachers, aides, substitutes, and administrators from 2018 to 2023 who were accused of sexual misconduct or grooming behaviors towards students, information previously unknown to the public. You're right, Republicans did react to this quickly. They have called an assembly committee hearing. You know, and like you said, Jill Underley has since her office has since released a statement disputing some of the reporting. However, I will note that she refused to be interviewed for this story by the Cap Times, which to me is always a little bit telling. Like, if she's trying to play cleanup, or the office there is trying to play cleanup after the fact of a story, it doesn't sit the same way as if you answered these questions to begin with. So I think, you know, I think Dr. Underley has some, I think this is a serious story, and I think they have invited her to appear at this assembly committee hearing. And if you're not going to respond to reporters, if you're not going to respond to journalists, you're going to end up sitting for a story like this. You're going to end up sitting in front of an assembly hearing and having to answer in a very different way, in a very public way. And I think that's where she's headed here. And I think this is a disturbing story in a lot of ways. It's one that it's a tough read where, you know, we can't really talk about that much of it here on the radio. But I would encourage folks to read this one because it's a lot of serious topics. And this is a serious investigative story that we need to take seriously.
And from a press standpoint and a politics standpoint, and I'm not saying that this is necessarily a case of it, but there have been plenty of cases where people don't respond. In essence, they are wishing the story away. Mm-hmm. And you cannot wish away a request by a reporter to look into something serious. Just because you don't talk to them doesn't mean the story won't get done. And that's, you know, some folks discover that the hard way. So again, a serious story that we'll be following for the foreseeable future here. And you can read more of Dan's reporting following up on this at the recombobulationarea.news as Civic Media's political editor. Dan, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks, Pat. Be well.
All right. Thank you. Coming up next, Matt and Air on Air. I will join Jane and Greg at 9:35. And then, of course, we'll have a lot of our regular Wednesday guests coming up tomorrow morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. We will see you tomorrow morning here, bright and early, 6 a.m. here up north.
This is WISS Berlin-Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein-Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. 3 weeks into the government shutdown, Republican senators are expected to head to the White House today. They've got a group lunch with President Trump. On November 1st, supplemental food benefits for low-income Americans will be cut off because of the shutdown. Also November 1st, open enrollment for those Obamacare begins without government help paying for premiums. The president of the Louvre will appear before France's Senate Culture Committee today, talking about the brazen jewel heist on Sunday. ABC's James Longman has the latest from Paris.
Grand moment d'émotion, un grand moment de bouleversement.
France's culture minister calling the raid an attack on French history and culture, and that the thieves spent just 3 minutes and 50 seconds inside the Apollo Gallery. The race is on to find eight of France's priceless crown jewels. The thieves did leave behind their gloves, gasoline, and a blowtorch, all now undergoing DNA analysis.
Amid reports of predators online, investigators in Florida are demanding access to Roblox. This is ABC News.